These moments, whether they're now or 15 years ago, they mark a generation. We have children who may, among us that weren't for this, but so too were there things before our lives. Those generations seems to encounter these moments that are heavy, that unsettle us, and we'll share a few moments about that. But when it comes to Scripture and speaking into these, often the book of Job comes to mind, and our bishop reminded me just a few weeks ago about a particular passage in Job. Now, Job is the quintessential, Lord, everything has come unhinged. Why in the world do you let this happen? What good are you? How can we live into this? And almost every response not only reminds us of our place, but gives us spectacular visions of who God is, transformational above our conscious sense of who God is. And the passage that the bishop reminded me the other day and that comes to mind today is in 26th verse. There's a line that says, in essence, God reached down and made a circle, drew a circle on the face of the ocean and made a boundary between light and darkness. Talk about perspective. God creating the horizon, the separation, light and dark. But when God draws lines, something amazing happens. God draws a line and it brings things together. It brings an ordered way. It always contains hope. And in this case, light and dark, this line scribed across the face of the ocean, it gives us the sense of time, days and weeks and months and years and the sun coming and going. And in it lies this great hope as well. Think about it. The sun coming up in the morning is such a metaphor for things will be better. The sun will come up tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun. How amazing. Because God scribed a line on the ocean face. And we have the beauty of light and dark coming together. Not one better than the other or one. Just bringing them together as gift. And in that hope, the sun will come up. And to push it even further, look what we do. If you read the scriptures and we think about our Jewish connection and time, how it's measured. We don't start in the morning. We start at night. A new day begins at sundown. How audacious is that? Not only do we trust God, but we're willing to start the day in darkness because we trust in God to bring the light. And so we go to sleep and a day starts, and when we wake up, it's already halfway done. God has been at work. What will God be doing? What has He done while we're asleep? And we just enter into God's day in the light. Talk about hope. When we draw lines, it's a different picture. We draw lines that take the whole and divide it up into parts. We draw lines that fracture relationships. We draw lines that will give one side an advantage over another side. We draw lines out of our foolishness, out of our pride, out of our selfishness, out of our ego. And everywhere that we draw a line, there is conflict. God's lines, there is hope and time and gift and wholeness. In our lines, there's brokenness and tension and conflict. We love these lines so much that we've convinced ourselves, maybe like Robert Frost has said, that we love a wall, that we make ourselves at peace comfortable with the tension that's at this wall. We take language like peace, shalom, and we rewrite its meaning. We take a word that means wholeness and connectedness and shalom and peace, that things are together, and we corrupt it so that what we start to mean by peace is just the willingness that I won't kill you today if you won't kill me. As if that's the normal way that people would be. As if that's how God's creation works, that we have to worry that someone may kill us or we may have to kill someone. That's what we've turned peace, shalom, into. We're like children with magnets. Remember magnets that, you know, specifically maybe a long one that has a positive and a negative side? And if you put the same side together, what do? They push apart. That's what we do. We just assume this is the way the world is, and we align our magnets so that we're the same pole as the person across from us on the other side of the line, so that we're always pushing them away, always getting what we want, always trying to get the advantage, but never uniting. We act as if relationships are something that we have to create instead of something that is and that we're called to rejoice in and allow to happen. That's what happens when we draw lines. So we've got these lines, and they're different kind of lines. And then there are these moments, like we think about today, where our lines get obliterated, where something happens in our world that unsettles us so much that we call our lines into question, not out of righteousness, but out of fear. Oh my gosh, we didn't think this could happen. How could anybody? We're a group, our group, our... And it is overwhelms us. And when our lines that we're used to get erased, we start to feel disoriented. We start to feel lost, if you will. After 9/11, that next Sunday, where did people go? To church. They came and gathered together. Why? Because there was a sense of loss of direction. The lines that we created, the brokenness, the destruction, the despair, the ego, when they are even tested a little bit, we're lost. And there's some sense within us that says we need to be together, because that's God's kind of line. Now, 9/11 was powerful, but there was an occasion that we heard about in the scriptures where those lines got erased as well. Israel, the scribes and Pharisees, watching the incarnate Son of God, God himself standing in the midst of them, proclaiming love and grace and justice and peace and mercy, so obliterated their sense of how things were that it blew them up. He's eating with sinners, and he welcomes them, because all the people who were on the outside of their line were just flocking to Jesus. They were listening to God. They were living not according to our lines, but according to God's lines. How dare they? How dare him? And so they do what we do when we're lost. We grumble. How could he? Rah, 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 rah. There is not a political action committee in the world that will write anything short of he eats with sinners and welcomes them. That's our response when our lines get obliterated. We start to protect. You got to get those people. How could he? What's going on here? Grumble and murmur. And so Jesus told him a parable. You heard him. He said, talked about a shepherd and a woman who searched after things that were important to them, a sheep, a coin. They spent so much time searching and looking that when they found it, they rejoiced and they called the whole community together to celebrate that they had found what they were looking for. And so clearly Jesus points, things were called to be together, to be united. And we recognize that when one individual is outside of the line, when they don't feel connected, when they've moved away, when they're out of God's relationship, that none of us are well. We belong together, not separated by the lines we create for ourselves or for others. So the individual, we can't be well as a group and as all creation until all individuals are good and belong. What a beautiful and powerful sense of direction. And well, what is it about an individual, though? Because we collectively turn to, you know, national things and some way to connect with, but as the individuals, there's something within us that we need to listen to and recognize. For instance, Michael Richards, who I've written about in the bulletin, there's a picture. The statue is called Tar Baby versus Saint Sebastian. That sculpture, so powerful. This individual remembers the African-American pilots, Tuskegee Airmen. And think about this. Here we look at that pilot and recognize that in his own country, he's outside the lines. Not wanted, not entitled, not accepted. And yet there's something within him that he's willing to give of himself to others. Where does that come from? How does that happen? when lines are blurred that way. And Michael Richards, in showing these airplanes crashing through, reminds us that these lines that we've created, when you step across them, people shoot lines at you and through you. It's the violence of the line. And you know St. Sebastian? Do you know St. Sebastian's story? Early Christian church, he decided he, as a Christian, wanted to help other Christians. So he joined the Roman army because that's who was persecuting the Christians under Diocletian. And so he did this so that secretly he could help other Christians. He's watching them persecute, but he could take them to the side. Hey, maybe we shouldn't do that. Why don't you get out of here? He worked as an undercover agent for Christians to avoid the persecution. And of course, he was found out. And so the emperor ordered that he would be hung up and they would shoot arrows at him, like target practice. And they shot arrow after arrow, but it didn't kill him. But the statues and the paintings you'll see, just like this one, arrows where these airplanes are. He was nursed back to health. And you know what he did? As soon as he was able, he went to the emperor's steps and proclaimed God's love and grace in Christ. And the emperor finished the execution. What makes an individual belong that way? Not to the lines we've drawn, but to God's lines. Or Wells Crowther, who was a stockbroker in the 9/11 time, came down out of his office in the first building, helps people down, ran back in and helped some more people down. And then he ran back in and helped some more people down. And then what did he do? He ran back in and then the building crushed him. What made him go look for the lost? He's like you and I. And maybe our situations aren't as dire or extreme, but do you hear what God is doing in the individual, in knowing these lines that God creates and not our lines? We're empowered to find hope and care. There's something that brings us together because as individuals, we cannot possibly find peace and grace as long as others are lost, or perhaps ourselves are lost. It's kind of a nebulous line. But I will promise this, that in the midst of these tragedies and in our lives, God gives us some space. Just like the boundary between light and darkness. In these heavy moments, in the tragedy, in the difficult places where all of a sudden our lines are erased, He'll give us space for hope. To search, to find, to look, to be found. Did you ever think about, We lift ourselves up and say, you know, as we get older, we should be able to make our own way. We should be on top of things. We should take care of ourselves. And sometimes we don't even stop and ask directions when we're lost on the road. Do you know anybody like that? Why is it, but what do we tell our children when they get lost? If you're lost, I want you to, what? Stay right where you are. Why? What? Because we'll come find you. When does that stop and this other part start? When do we discover no one will come and look for us? When do we think we have to do it on our own? When do we have to draw our own lines because we don't think God will send anyone for us anymore? Where does that come from? But we do it, and we're lost. Jesus talks a lot about remembering and reconciling. And I want to just spend a moment because we're prayers of remembrance. When we remember, it is this moment where we are aware that there's brokenness. Maybe it takes towers falling down. Maybe it takes a difficult part in our life. Maybe it's a good and joyful thing that changes our perspective. But these moments where we become lost to our own sense of self and what we think is right, God is with us and Jesus walking with us in these times of hope. And He'll give us as long as it takes to be found. That's the good news. That's the hope. But we have to remember. And it's not just a remembering of our mind, but it's a remembering that's deep from our soul that says, wait a minute, He will find me. I am loved. There's no stopping God. Now what I need to do is to figure out what it is to be found. And that's where reconciling comes. In many places, Paul talks about how Jesus has reconciled us. One of my favorites is in Colossians when he says, you who were mind against good, doing evil things instead of good. You were apart, you were estranged. Jesus has reconciled you into his own body through his death, so that you may be presented blameless, holy, irreproachable before him, provided you remain steadfast and centered in the faith, and you don't stray from the hope that is in the gospel. And that's the kicker for us. The hope that's in the gospel. You don't have to find your way. God will find you. We don't let people fall out of lines that we make. We go find them. We recognize that there is hope, as in the sun coming in the morning, as in the sense of even in loss and tragedy, God's love and grace is pursuing us. Christ is with us. We have to hold on to the hope. And brothers and sisters in the body of Christ, we both rejoice that look at how wonderful and blessed God is, and we worship and celebrate, but we also recognize that and remember that it's not the way it ultimately will be. And it's not the way that allows us peace and comfort when these lines still exist, ours separate from God. We want to be reconciled, and reconciling means moving our lines so that they're the same as God's lines. Are you with me? That the things we've divided up that really belong together, that ultimately are called, that we do that and we see the world as God sees it, that we have a vision of how things are and will be, that we understand it's not for us to divide up and separate and keep out. It is for us to recognize that it all belongs together, the light, the dark, the love, the hate, the death, that all of that is held together in God's love and grace. And we're about reconciling so that we don't draw these lines of brokenness, but we see the order and the love and the place where God allows us to dwell. And I'm reminded as we consider that, we need a vision. And one that comes to my mind that is powerful for me is a poem by Wendell Berry. He's a farmer, poet, theologian. And the poem is called A Vision. And what I want you to hear, particularly at the end, is that it is in these places that are so heavy and hard and seem unclear, even make us feel lost. What am I to do in the face of tragedy? It is in the very nature of going through that with Christ's presence that brings about the reconciliation, the unity, the love. Wendell says it this way: if we will have the wisdom to survive, to stand like slow-growing trees in this ruined place, enriching it, renewing it. If we will make the seasons welcomed here, asking not too much of earth or heaven, then long after we're dead, the lives that our lives prepare will live here. Their houses strongly placed on the valley sides. Rich fields and gardens fill the windows. And the river runs clear like we will never know it. And over it, birdsong like a canopy. And the levels of the hills will be green meadows. Stock bells in noon shade. And the steeps where greed and ignorance cut down an old forest, there will be an old forest. Its rich leaf fall drifting on its roots. And the veins of forgotten springs will have opened up, and families will be singing in the fields. And in their voices, they will hear a music that has risen from the very ground. And they will take nothing from the ground that they will not return, no matter the grief at parting. And memory, native to that valley, will spread across it like a grove. And memory will become legend. And legend will grow into song. And song will grow into sacrament. The abundance of this place, the song of its people and its birds, will be health and wisdom and indwelling light. This is no paradisal dream. Its hardship is its possibility.